Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in East County. Today, my very special guest is Morgan Cook. She is a member of the San Diego Union-Tribune's investigative reporting team. She's previously worked for the North County Times and the Orange County Register. She's covered subjects ranging from local government to campaign finance. And now, she's been named the 2017 Journalist of the Year by the Society of Professional Journalists in San Diego for her series of investigative reports on none other than Congressman Duncan Hunter's campaign expenses. In announcing the award, the professional journalism group stated, "San Diego has seen its share of big stories this past year, but our board believes no local journalist did better work than Cook in her relentless accountability reporting on Congressman Duncan Hunter's use of campaign funds for personal expenses. She broke the story last year and continues to follow it after the Department of Justice made clear in March that it is investigating Congressman Hunter." Now, in the 21 stories that she's written about Hunter's troubles, Cook explained to readers why this matters, opening up the possibility of undue influence by showing just who was giving money to Hunter and what they might be getting in return. Now, we should add, in all fairness, that Congressman Hunter has denied any wrongdoing, though he did take out a loan and repay his campaign about $60,000 for items that appeared to be personal expenses, and he is under federal investigation by the Justice Department for his action, in large part due to the reporting of today's guest, Morgan Cook. Morgan, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
So, can we start off by having you tell us what tipped you off? What were the red flags that first made you decide to start investigating Congressman Hunter's finances?
In April of last year, the FEC, the Federal Election Commission, sent a letter to Hunter's campaign that was posted publicly on its website. And the letter asked for additional information about some particular expenditures that he had marked, the campaign had marked as personal and needing to be reimbursed. And the expenses were tuition to his children's private school and some expenses for video games from an online video game provider.
Very interesting. So what steps did you do to start tracking down the story from there? And what did Hunter's office say about that when you asked them?
Well, when we first asked them about the expenses that the FEC questioned, Hunter explained that the tuition payment was intended to be a charitable contribution.
From his campaign? Since when do campaigns make charitable contributions?
Actually, kind of a lot.
Okay.
But anyway, he said that it was intended to be a charitable contribution, but somehow was entered by the school as tuition. And it was just a mistake, miscommunication.
Okay.
And then with the video games, he said that his son had asked if he could, you know, stream these video games. And Hunter said, yeah, you can. You can get the credit card out of my wallet. But the son picked up the wrong credit card. Apparently, they're both blue.
Yeah. Now, I heard the credit card story, I kind of laughed because we had that same mistake in our household where somebody used the wrong credit card. And, you know, my husband would say, why did you use this credit card instead of the one where you get the Costco bonus points or something? Mm-hmm. So it actually sounded like it could be credible at that point. So what made you think that there was more to the story than maybe just a couple of possibly innocent mistakes?
The main reason I thought that is that after that story ran, I thought to myself, well, let's just make sure that these sort of issues haven't really cropped up before. I'll just go back through earlier campaign finance reports and just have a little look-see.
Yeah.
And I started seeing some expenses that are just seemed unusual, very unusual compared to what you typically see.
Mm-hmm. Can you give us some examples?
Yeah, sure. There was an expenditure to an oral surgeon in El Cajon, which, you know, the campaign purpose of that seemed not obvious to me.
Did they have an explanation for that?
I think the explanation for that was a mix-up in the credit cards.
Again?
I think so.
So how many times do you mix up the credit card? What else? So you started looking back, and You found a lot of other anomalies. One that stuck in my mind was a European family vacation over Thanksgiving with some really big expenses, including things like hotels and meals. But you didn't just take the campaign's word for what these were. So tell us what happened when you started picking up the phone and actually calling to ask about some of these things.
When we started seeing that there were questionable expenditures, you know, that were fairly obvious to us, right? And then we saw that there were expenditures in Italy. Any international expenditures for a campaign are something that you might want to have a closer look, right? Because it doesn't mean that they are illegal. It doesn't mean that mistakes were made. But you might want to have a closer look, you know?
Correct.
So we did. And, you know, we found pictures on his social media accounts, you know, popular tourist destinations and things. So we started carefully combing through and seeing where all of these places that they'd been paying, like where they were and stuff. And actually we found the jewelry store and gave them a call because it said that there was food and beverages. But, you know, it was an Italian name. We didn't know if it was a restaurant or what. We were just going through.
And it turned out to be a high-end jewelry store. And what did they tell you?
They said that they do not sell food and beverages.
Interesting. Okay, so the campaign charitably was mistaken about that, maybe about the whole trip.
Maybe. I don't know.
Very interesting. Another interesting one was first-class airfare, $600 worth for his child's pet rabbit. What did the campaign have to say about that one?
Well, actually, the campaign admitted that, or I guess they made that public on their own.
Because after these other things came out.
Right. Because the Office of Congressional Ethics had prepared a report, and apparently they had seen it, and they were saying that perhaps the Office of Congressional Ethics was a little out of control, had gone a little far, you know, and they just were saying that everything was clearly wrong.
So they were sort of in damage control mode at that point.
Right. And they used this as an example of saying, look, clearly this was a mistake. You know, clearly this was a mistake, but the Office of Congressional Ethics isn't sort of accepting that explanation.
When did you first realize just how serious this was and what the potential ramifications might be?
I started to think it was pretty serious when we started uncovering kind of a large volume of expenses over kind of a long time. I'm talking like 180 something.
180.
I think. I don't have that number off the top of my head, but it was quite a few.
Okay, so it was a lot. What were some of the biggest challenges that you faced in this investigation?
It was hard to verify things and get explanations because Hunter's office declined to comment or answer a lot of our questions.
We've had that issue at times from that office as well.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm sure they have their reasons. It made things a little harder for me because I really am interested in knowing what happened.
Right, and I think if there was an innocent explanation that they would want your readers to know that.
Yes.
Okay. All right. We'll leave it at that. Maybe there is one. If so, I would like to add, if Congressman Hunter's staff is listening to this, we would welcome the opportunity to have those answers to any of the questions that Morgan has asked that haven't yet been answered. Some people say that campaign finance violations, really in the grand scheme of things, don't matter that much to voters. Morgan, why do you think this is important, and why do you believe that people should care, whether it's Duncan Hunter or any other politician?
I think that people should care because campaign finance is important because it allows people with special interests to get access to the candidate. They get to talk to the candidate, and they can explain their perspective on things that they think the country needs, you know, issues that they would like to see addressed and all of those things. But the people who don't go to the campaign events, who might have another side of the story, don't get the same access, right?
Yeah.
So office holders, they understand the arguments. They believe them. They think that that person has a very strong point and good expertise, but they haven't really heard the other side of the story. So they may make decisions that are more in the interests of their campaign contributors than, you know, the silent taxpayers who didn't get to weigh in on that.
Yeah, and I suppose that it also goes to somebody's ethics in general. If there is a misuse of campaign funds that perhaps was not unintentional, you know, what does that say about the person's ethics overall, the person that you're counting on in Congress to hopefully stand up for the voters that he was elected to represent?
I think that the concern is that they might lose sight of that, mm-hmm. you know, and they might end up doing favors that they don't perceive as doing favors, you know, that the office holder doesn't perceive it as doing a favor, but...
Yeah, interestingly, we just published our own report that our wonderful new intern Jordan helped us on, authored actually. And in this report, he revealed that Congressman Hunter took $16,000 in donations from the tobacco industry in the last campaign cycle. And right after that, he introduced legislation that would weaken regulations on vaping and e-cigarettes, basically say the FDA can't look into what's in these things before they're put out on the market. And of course, they have carcinogens and all sorts of things in them. That kind of ties in with your report on fundraisers that he's held or that have been held for him at cigar lounges, literally smoke-filled rooms with lobbyists and well-heeled donors there. Do you think that campaign finance reforms are needed to better protect the public interest? I mean, what is the answer to this situation?
I think it would be great if there were more transparency about who goes to these events. You know, when the campaign spends money to, you know, to host an event or have an event by Dinner for Donors, those types of things, I think it would be great to know if it was a campaign fundraiser, who is there?
You know?
And those details are not required and are not disclosed.
Good point. Something like that, we really don't know. Was this just a lot of his individuals and friends and longtime, you know, people who just support his conservative principles maybe? Or was this people that were lobbyists for the tobacco industry or executives from the tobacco industry that were there sort of, you know, whining and dining him to support their agenda? We just don't know.
Right. We don't have a great way to figure that out.
Yeah. No. And we should note that Hunter, his reason that he's given for why he introduced this legislation was to help businesses that sell the tobacco products and also because he believes that vaping has helped him to quit smoking cigarettes, although, of course, he still smokes the electronic cigarettes.
Mm-hmm.
But in his mind, that's better.
He's been a longtime proponent of vaping.
Correct. So. What reactions have you had from readers since your series broke? And how do you, I'm curious what you've heard. Has it been positive or negative? And how do you deal with any critics?
Most of the emails that, you know, I've gotten from readers, calls and emails, have been actually very supportive. You know, thank you for your coverage. We need this type of information. It's good for us to know. But there have been also emails and calls from readers who've said, look, you know, you're after this poor person because he's a Republican and, you know, is this just some kind of witch hunt?
How do you respond to that?
I mean, I try to explain that our business is really about facts and rules, and facts and rules don't really change based on the political opinions of a reporter or the editors or the paper. And we try to hold all public officials, regardless of their parties, accountable to the rules.
Yeah, ironically, aren't you also the reporter who looked into campaign finance controversies involving Doug Applegate, who was the Democratic candidate running against Republican Congressman Daryl Issa?
I did. And, you know, I've looked into unions, I've looked into lots of people from different political parties.
So it's really not about party, it's about integrity and really doing your job as a journalist to reflect the public interest and not protecting or promoting any particular individual or party.
Right. That is what we try very hard to do.
Okay.
What I try very hard to do.
Now, your reporting was largely responsible, I'm sure, for the House Ethics Commission deciding that it would look into this. And then later, the U.S. Justice Department announced that it's conducting its own probe, and the Ethics Commission has backed off under the request of the Justice Department right now, which is customary, listeners, that the Justice Department wants to be able to question witnesses, subpoena them if necessary, first in cases like this. Can you give us some background, Morgan, on what all of this might mean for Congressman Hunter's future? How has the Justice Department handled similar cases in the past where there were issues raised about substantial personal expenditures charged up to a campaign?
One of the cases that I think leaps to everyone's mind is Jesse Jackson Jr.
A Democrat.
A Democrat, yes. Mm-hmm. And he was from Illinois, and he was indicted, and, you know, the indictment said he spent money on, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars of campaign money on things like Rolex watches and fur coats and things.
Yeah.
And, okay. You know, interestingly, his wife was his campaign consultant, campaign manager. She's being paid by his campaign for her services.
No,
she also was indicted, and both of them ended up in prison.
Now, am I correct that Congressman Hunter's wife has also been a paid staffer or consultant on his campaign as well?
Yes, and for quite some time, and through the end of February of this year.
Now, it's not necessarily illegal to hire a relative to work on your campaign?
It is not illegal. It has been approved by, I believe, the Committee on Ethics.
So what makes it over the line, say, in Jesse Jackson Jr.'s case, what was the red flag?
Experts who I've spoken to have said that the risks there, right, are that this a safeguard against problematic spending, personal spending perhaps, is sort of diminished when both the campaign manager and the candidate could have a shared personal benefit.
Got
so
it.
The protections, the safety nets aren't as good.
Yeah.
Or they might not be. They might be.
But. So I read one story that indicated there have been in recent years about four cases that were somewhat similar to his in terms of what the allegations were. Two of those, the member of Congress did wind up in jail and prison and resigning from office, and one of the others has just been indicted, and as of when I researched it a couple of weeks ago, the fourth one, there was a grand jury being convened to decide whether to file charges or not. So what usually happens if a Justice Department does decide they're going to indict? And of course, they could clear him also. We don't know. We don't know that. But if they decide that there's material worthy of indicting somebody who's a member of Congress, how is that typically handled?
The office holder, actually typically resigns.
So there's no congressional rule that says they have to do that.
Right. No, no. And many of them have continued holding office even after they were convicted of a crime.
Amazing.
So, yeah. So, you know, it depends. But most lawmakers who are indicted, they tend to resign because it's sort of, it can sometimes be part of a plea deal.
Correct.
And
or a party may pressure them if they feel that they're not strong enough to get reelected at that point.
It may become harder for them to do their job because constituents are angry and hassling them all the time. They may just not like to have to put up with all the public scrutiny. I mean, it can't be that fun.
Yeah, exactly. So. Now, in all fairness, we should state that after this investigation broke, and it was all over the media, national media and local media, that Congressman Hunter did do the right thing, and he did repay his campaign about $60,000, including some of which he said, you know, maybe wasn't personal expenses, but to be absolutely sure, he repaid back everything.
Since we started asking questions in April of last year, it's been about $62,000.
$62,000. But he didn't just have this money sitting around in an account somewhere. He didn't just write a check for it. He actually took out a loan, I understand. Is that correct?
Yes. He took out a third loan secured by his home in Alpine.
Well, that's interesting. If things like oral surgery and vacations to Italy were really personal expenses and he really meant to pay for them out of his personal funds and it was just a mistake with the wrong credit card or something, you would think he would have that money on hand in the account. But you're saying he didn't.
Not to my knowledge. It appears that he did not. And, you know, that sort of could intensify concerns a little bit, you know, because it sort of speaks to his financial situation and raises the sort of specter that perhaps he was supplementing income with the campaign.
Very.
Then that may be so far off target, but that is the concern.
Yeah, it's certainly the appearance that it would seem to perhaps have.
Right.
You're right. Well, this isn't the first time that he's been in the headlines making controversies. A couple of years ago in 2014, Washingtonian Magazine had the dubious honor of naming him the biggest party animal in Washington, D.C. They always list the best and worst of legislators, and they have the legislative staffers back there in Washington vote for this. So that was kind of an interesting thing. Makes you kind of wonder where all that money might have been going.
Yes. I wonder. I would love to know.
There you go. Well, I'm certainly looking forward, Morgan, to reading more of your reports the next time the next round of campaign finance reports for him comes out. And keep up the great work.
Thank you so much. I will try.
Okay. Well, listeners, if you've just tuned in, we have been speaking with Morgan Cook, who is the award-winning investigative reporter for the San Diego Union-Tribune, whose investigation of Congressman Hunter has led to a congressional ethics probe and a Department of Justice criminal investigation into his finances. Morgan, I want to congratulate you again on your big award being named Journalist of the Year by the Society of Professional Journalists. I know you're going to be picking up your award at their banquet in July at the Kona Kai Hotel here. For any listeners who may want to attend the SPJ big event, can you tell us, though, what the honor means to you?
The honor is huge. I mean, I'm so touched. I am so flattered. I'm so excited because, you know, it sort of speaks to the San Diego media's commitment to, you know, doing this kind of work, doing it even when people push back, holding public officials accountable, and just keeping on and keeping on until we get to the closest obtainable version of the truth. And even when it's hard, you know, and I think that that's especially important for us to demonstrate now when there's been so much criticism of the media and accusations of fake news flying around.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. We've seen on the one hand, there actually has been a lot of fake news lately. That seems to be a phenomenon we're all having to deal with. And we have even the president himself being very critical of journalists and calling longtime reputable organizations like the Washington Post, whose reporting, you know, resulted in the Watergate findings and bringing down the president, Richard Nixon, for obstruction of justice, basically. The New York Times, even calling these credible organizations fake news. What advice would you give to young, up-and-coming journalists today in this era who want to be respected as journalists? What words of wisdom would you have for them?
I would suggest that they just keep doing their work and doing it to the best of their ability, to just keep doing what we've always done, which is find facts, vet them, try to verify information, and then report what we know to the best of our ability. And I think that facts will protect us from those types of accusations because it's the truth.
Yeah, well, that's what the First Amendment is all about. And it's noteworthy, I think, that our founding fathers enshrined journalism as the only profession that is actually constitutionally protected in the Bill of Rights.
We have a job to do. It's an important one.
Well, keep up the good work, and I want to thank you so much, Morgan, for taking time out of your busy schedule to come on our show today and join us today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been an honor.